CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast.
Now here's your host, Brad Pepping.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. In the news this evening, H1N1 vaccines were available to the general UBC population for the first time today, but by 11 a.m., students were already being turned away. The university and Metro Vancouver are locked in a debate over who should control campus planning. AMS President Blake Frederick gives us his views on the situation. And media pressure leads the RCMP to release a videotape showing Clayton Wiley's treatment in police custody in the hours leading up to his death. We'll have all this plus sports and your weekday weather up right here on News 101, CITR 101.9 FM. First, we're in the middle of our annual fun drive, and for years, CITR 101.9 FM has facilitated the broadcast of local and independent voices. Through extensive technical production and program training, anyone can receive direct, hands-on experience with up-to-date new media. With live streaming and podcasts, digital recorders and local servers, and even turntables and CD players, CITR offers unparalleled equipment and technical expertise for the cost alone of a membership. Through your continued support, alumni work with CTV, CBC, and the Globe and Mail, to name just a few. Help CITR provide students and community members with broadcast training and education. We only ask once a year. Support the station now. Call 604-822-8648 or 604-UBC-UNIT. Today, we also have some special News 101 swag for the first three donors during our program. Donate now, right now, right now, and you'll get your choice between a CD of Obiju, Dinosaur Jr., or Animal Collective. Please, again, call 604-UBC-UNIT or donate online at citr.ca, but the first three will get their choice of the CDs. Now I'm happy to present our weekly series with the UBC, a look at campus news with Katarina Gurgic and Samantha Jung, who are in studio this afternoon bringing us the headlines from this week's front page.
Hi, I'm Katarina Gurgic for Samantha Jung, and here are your top stories. UBC students are those victims to bursary scams. According to the UBC RCMP Economic Crime Unit, some people were charging students to help them through the bursary process, guaranteeing them bursaries of up to $4,000. The students, who have to attend workshops, give out personal information and pay for the help, were also found to have falsified their application papers. The RCMP is currently not planning to press charges against any of the students involved.
According to the 8th annual Canadian University Report Card conducted by the Globe and Mail, UBC got an A+ in academic reputation and campus atmosphere. The surveyed students, however, were not all that pleased with class size, student services, housing, and career preparation, all of which only received a B-. The lowest score of C was awarded to the food services available on campus.
The AMS voted against a motion to bring back slates in AMS elections. Prior to the 2005 elections, slates in AMS politics functioned much like political parties. They allowed candidates to pool resources and unite under common platforms to create cohesive brands. The debate surrounding slate resurrection reappeared this past spring during the AMS executive elections, when AMS President Blake Frederick found himself temporarily disqualified after complaints were made regarding his running on an apparent slate with other candidates. The council was almost evenly divided on the issue. Candidates will run as independents again this year.
The AMS voted last Wednesday in favor of opposing the inclusion of U-Pass holders in the $2.50 YVR ad fare for those riding the Canada Line. Effective January 1, 2010, the ad fare will be required of passengers traveling to the airport in either direction. The AMS has been informed that this fee will be applicable to students with the U-Pass. The motion passed unanimously, and the AMS external office will now develop an action plan.
A motion to create a non-voting seat for students with disabilities was voted down by AMS Council last week, following a heated 90-minute debate. Over 20 students were present at AMS Council Wednesday night to express their opinions. Some counselors opposed the motion partially because they were concerned that creating the seat would be out of line with faculty-based system of AMS Council, and that students should be addressing their constituents to get their voices heard. However, others believe that there is not a focus on the physical and mental barriers that students with disabilities face that can affect them from attending council meetings, and that council could serve as a more representative body for students.
UBC officials were not amused when they learned that Metro Vancouver has recommended the installation of new zoning bylaws for UBC. According to UBC VP External Stephen Owen, the proposal is problematic because it places regulations on areas on campus that is slated for academic land use, which is, and the university is calling this a violation of academic freedom. UBC has refused to participate in a working group and that is to include representatives from constituencies on and off campus. And finally, we bring you President Blake Frederick's opinion on the UBC proposal to control campus.
What is the AMS position on the university's actions regarding the proposed guidelines for Metro Vancouver?
The AMS's position is that we believe that there is a serious problem with governance at UBC, specifically as it relates to land use development. So we've seen in recent history problems that have been raised by students around the University Boulevard project to build condos and underground bus loop in that area, as well as the university's plans to reduce the UBC farm to a third of its size. And we believe that this is an issue of governance. Recently, Metro Vancouver has put forward a proposal to start a working group with all stakeholders on campus, including students and the university, to investigate ways in which we can enact measures so that students and the community at large will have more input into the process, and we support that process.
What are the AMS thoughts on the university's actions regarding the proposed bylaw?
Well, we the AMS encourages UBC to be involved in the Metro Vancouver process and be involved on the working group committee that's currently going to investigate this issue. We're very disappointed by UBC's statement that they said they would not be involved in that working group. The AMS wants to have a conversation with the university about the issue of governance, and we haven't had any willingness on their part to do so yet. So we urge them to sit down at the table and talk about this important issue.
And will the AMS be participating in the working group?
Yes, the AMS will participate in the working group. We believe it is important to raise our concerns about governance, and we will accept whatever audience is available to us to make those concerns heard.
Okay, and the AMS only has one representative on the working group at the vacancy. Do you have any concerns about that?
Yes, I did raise concerns with Metro Vancouver about the fact that we only have one representative. Given the fact that the AMS represents 45,000 students on campus, I do believe it's imperative for us to have a bigger contingency of student representation on that committee, particularly because of some of the divergent interests on campus with respect to this issue. For example, students who live in residences on campus will have distinct concerns about governance and land use, and we believe that their voice will be heard as well.
Great. Thanks, Blake.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. It's now time for a break, but it's time for you to help us out with a fund drive. Our phone number is 604-UBC-UNIT, so if you don't want to miss any of our programming, this is your time to call. Call us over the break, and anyone will be happy to speak with you and help you out. And just to remind you, if you phone now, you will have your choice between a Dinosaur Jr., Animal Collective, or Obijou CD. Up next, we'll be speaking with Anna Marie D'Angelo from Vancouver Coastal Health about why UBC's H1N1 clinic had to turn many away.
From November 16th to 27th, CRTR will be hosting a two-week video game competition. On the main floor of the sub, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., Miss Pac-Man and Galaga will be set up. $2 to play. Highest scores of the day get a limited edition CITR Fun Drive t-shirt. Highest scores at the end of the 2 weeks gets a trip to Las Vegas, courtesy of Travel Cuts. So come and be old school.
C'est l'histoire d'un soleil Vancouver is a diverse city, and that's why CITR is committed to multicultural programming. We feature music from all over the world: Ethiopia, India, France, Africa, Latin America, Russia, Iran, Jamaica, Italy, and Japan. And we don't only broadcast in English.
On diffuse dans un grand nombre de langues.
We broadcast in a number of other languages.
Pour sûr, il y aura une programmation multiculturelle à Vancouver. Supportez CITR maintenant. Appelez au 604-822-8648. 604-UBC-UNIT. Ou donnez en ligne à citr.ca/donate.
Help ensure that there will be multicultural programming in Vancouver. Support CITR now. Call 604-822-8648, 604-UBC-UNIT, or donate securely online at citr.ca/donate.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You're listening to News 101, broadcasting live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. CITR is in the midst of its annual fund drive, and as you know, CITR is a non-commercial, non-owned by huge media corporation. Basically, what that means is that we don't rely on big corporations or government for money. And what that means is that we get to play what we want. So what we want you to do is, this is our only fund drive of the year, and to keep quality independent radio on air like News 101, this is your chance to phone in at 604-UBC-UNIT to donate. And just as a reminder, for the first three donors to call in, you'll get your choice between a CD of Dinosaur Jr., Animal Collective, or Obiju. So call 604-UBC-UNIT, that's 604-822-8648. Today was the first day the H1N1 shot was available on campus to the general population. The clinic opened at 10 a.m., but by 11 a.m., those without an appointment were being turned away. I spoke with Vancouver Coastal Health Representative Anna Marie D'Angelo. Here's that conversation. So as of November 20th, Coastal Health has, or BC Health, I should say, has said that the H1N1 vaccine should be made available for the general public. And so as of today, the 23rd, and tomorrow, UBC is holding clinics on campus to administer the H1N1 vaccine. Is this comparative to the other provinces in Canada?
I'm not sure what the other provinces are doing. But certainly the eligibility has been open to the general population, so we welcome everyone to go get their shots. Right now, the H1N1 transmission rate is actually going down, so we're feeling that the second wave of infection is actually, it's on the downside right now. We're urging people not to be complacent about that and to get their shots, because quite often in pandemics, there's a third wave, and certainly you don't want to be getting the H1N1 virus in January or, you know, February when you're doing exams.
And so in that case, will the vaccine be made available at any point in time up until the health authorities believe that there's no longer a threat?
The vaccine is available through the whole season. It's right now flu season, and it usually goes to, in BC, it usually goes to the end of March, around that time. And in the previous years, what has happened is that we usually have had a late onset of seasonal flu. You get it after Christmas, but because the H1N1 pandemic virus has been circulating since April, we saw some increased cases actually pretty much after school started, and certainly now it's peaked in the second wave.
And so I've also been looking through some documentation that's actually showing that the what may be the UBC population, the population that has in an age group, kind of the younger 20 to 25, is at a more of a risk. Could you go into detail of why that might be?
Sure. It's actually people that are at risk for complications. I mean, everybody's at risk for getting the infection because it's circulating in the community. What we're more concerned about is how we had set up our clinics and also giving the doctors instructions that we are to inoculate the people at risk for complications. And those were pregnant women, people with any kind of underlying health conditions such as asthma, diabetes, heart conditions, people that are immunocompromised, children, that kind of that, those kind of populations, and then we broaden it out to healthcare workers, caregivers of those groups, etc. What we found is that this pandemic virus, H1N1 virus, is affecting younger people more than it is older people. And one of the theories is because in the 50s, I think pre-1957, they're saying, if you were around at that time, there was a swine flu virus going around, and a lot of people have immunity to that, and it gives you a bit of immunity to the H1N1 pandemic virus that we have right now.
And so is that part of the decision to put these two clinics on UBC campus? Was that in partnership with UBC Health, or was that simply a Coastal Health decision?
It would have been a Coastal Health decision in that, we have a certain amount of vaccine, and that was the other thing about this vaccine supply. So we're getting it in an allotment. So we could not open it to the general population all at once. So we decided to do the priority groups first and broaden it. And certainly having it at UBC, there's a lot of people there and who would want to be vaccinated, and making it accessible to them. The other place where you can get your vaccination is through your doctors. In Vancouver and Richmond, the doctors were wanting more supply, and they'll be getting that next week. So the clinics have been more popular in those areas.
And so I actually went to the clinic this morning, and unfortunately I hadn't set up an appointment, but I guess that was kind of the system that healthcare workers were hoping, that people will set up the appointment before they come down so that there aren't too many drop-ins. However, I was informed by one of the officials or one of the healthcare representatives that there was only 120 doses of available for drop-ins today, and that tomorrow there will only be an additional 30. Is this simply because the demand is far greater than the supply?
Actually, it's because of our allotment this week is on the low side. By next week, we're expecting a bigger shipment, so there'll be better larger supplies. You can try your doctor and ask your doctor if your doctor has any H1N1 vaccine. The other option is the clinics there's three clinics in Vancouver. They are usually good with supplies. What we want to do is have the vaccine in people's arms. We don't want it stored in the fridge. So, and I know that Dr. Perry Kendall, who's the medical health officer of the province, he said, well, it's great if they run out, because we are getting more. I'm sorry that occurred in your situation, because you're very conscientious about going to get your shots, and certainly we'd want you to have one. One of the things that we are saying to people that go to clinics, the drop-in clinics, is to get there early. Don't leave it at the last minute, because sometimes there's a surge of people that go all of a sudden, and a lot of times it's usually the time that they don't have left, but sometimes it's because they do run out.
And so based on these kind of the ways in which we are noticing healthcare authorities across the world constantly negotiating what's going on, do you feel, in your opinion or in Coastal Health's opinion, is this a marker of how we'll be able to deal with a pandemic in the future? Because obviously it's arguable that this isn't a pandemic in the level that hundreds of thousands of people are dying very quickly. Do you feel that if that situation were to happen, we would be prepared?
Pandemic, actually, by definition, is just how it's transmitted. When you've got it from one country to another country, and if it shows up from a second country to a third country, then it's defined as pandemic. It does not indicate the severity of cases. And that's one thing to be clear about with this pandemic H1N1 that we have. The seasonal flu causes way more numbers of deaths than this H1N1 pandemic has caused in B.C., there's something like, I believe it's in the vicinity of 1,000 people die a year for seasonal flu in the last few years in B.C. Right now, this H1N1 pandemic virus, there's been about, I think it's a couple of dozen people have died. Most of those have had underlying health conditions. So as far as, certainly people have been hospitalized, certainly people have died, and that's a tragedy. But certainly it is not as severe as what happens with seasonal flu.
And do you feel that in any way the relationship between, media is being heralded as, making this a bigger pandemic or bigger threat than it actually is, but then we've also seen the corruption amongst certain individuals in examples where hockey players have been moved to the front of the line. Well, can you describe the relationship that Coastal Health is having with the public in order to maintain that type of authority?
Well, certainly you know, if you're a hockey player with asthma, you're able to get the H1N1 shot. You know, and we, you know, certainly that we are concurrent with Dr. Perry Kendall, the medical health officer of the province, that, you know, people should not queue jump, and that people, you know, that are in the priority group should get it first. Simply, not only is for their own health, but, you know, these are the people, should they get H1N1, they're going to be in the hospitals, they're going to be in the ICUs, you know, where, you know, if we can free up that space for other people, that sort of, you know, benefits us all. As far as, you know, our nurses, you know, they will ask you before you have your shot, you know, they'll ask you questions when we had the priority groups. And, you know, a lot of people that didn't seem like they should have been in line, that seemed they were quite well, were in fact had underlying health conditions, and the nurses were satisfied with that. What we had was, when we had the lineups, was that, you know, there's a surge of people that want to get their shots right away. And we, like I say, we only had allotments of vaccine. We didn't get, like, our full supply in any one shot. So that's why that occurred.
Right. Well, thank you very much for speaking with me today. I do appreciate it, and best of luck in the future.
Yeah, and you can get your shot at, everybody should get their shot, but if you want to go, there's check the Immunize BC website for the clinics near you. And like I say, if you try to get there, don't leave it to the last minute.
Right.
It's usually pretty good luck of getting your shot.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That was Vancouver Coastal Health Representative Anna Marie D'Angelo. And I actually have to interrupt the news for a few seconds just to let you guys know that we are a very short dollar amount away from $16,000, which is pretty amazing. So this is our special offer to you. If you donate $34.11, not only will we read your name on air right now, we will also love you forever. And let's not forget your choice between those three CDs. So if you're a fan of Dinosaur Jr., Animal Collective, Obiju, or if you're a fan of CITR, please phone right now. If you donate $34.11, you will put us over $16,000. You'll live forever in our hearts. Now, back to the news. We're going to bring you now an update from a story we covered last week. The RCMP has agreed to release a videotape of Clayton Willie's treatment while in police custody. Willie died in July of 2003, 16 hours after being subdued by a police taser. A 2004 coroner's inquest into the case concluded that Willie's death was caused by a cocaine overdose and not police use of force. Willie's sister, Brynna Willie, told CBC News after the inquest that her brother had marks all over his body, a bruised head, missing teeth, and internal bleeding after the altercation with security guards and police. Brynna also questioned why a taser was to subdue her brother. Sorry, why a taser was used to subdue her brother when he was already wearing handcuffs. Last week, the BC Civil Liberties Association and Union of BC Indian Chiefs joined together to demand the release of videotapes which show Willie's interaction with police leading up to his death. Previously, the RCMP had cited privacy concerns as the reason for not releasing the tape. Following pressure from civil society groups, the RCMP announced last Tuesday that it will release the full tape to the public pending the approval of Willie's next of kin. Now it's time for Word on the Streets, and today we turn to Richard Kemick for student views he's gathered on Canadian history.
Do you guys find Canadian history interesting? Why or why not?
Generally, I find Canadian history not that interesting, mainly because their involvement in major wars is not very significant. And so in history books, generally, the most interesting part is reading about the wars. So.
I kind of find that it is interesting in the way that we don't participate in war that much, and that we choose to find different ways to resolve problems like treaties and stuff like that. And I find that interesting. And a lot of other times in history where all the countries and other nations choose to use that violence and use that warfare as the way to solve problems, as Canadians don't.
If there is one historical event in Canada that first comes to your mind, what would it be?
Confederation.
Canadian Railroad, the Chinese building the Canadian Railroad, yeah.
I'm here with Paul. Paul, do you find Canadian history interesting? Why or why not?
Hello, not really, because it's really short.
Is there a singular event in Canadian history that sticks out in your mind?
The war between Métis and, I guess, the English people.
I'm here with Oliver. Oliver, are you interested in Canadian history? Why or why not?
I am, but I don't believe it's developed as much as other cultures in the world, so for that reason I haven't studied it as extensively as other cultures.
What other cultures do you think have developed their history really well?
European cultures, primarily, yeah.
If there is one event in Canadian history that sticks out in your mind, what would that event be?
There's not one that sticks out.
So the reason that we thought this was important today is because the Department of History will be holding its annual undergraduate town hall meeting this Wednesday, November 25th. This is an opportunity for both history majors and non-history majors alike to voice their issues that they feel need to be addressed and furthermore discuss possible solutions. This year's town hall will differ from those of previous years because it's going to be filmed by the American Historical Association and incorporated in a short documentary on undergraduate history. UBC is the only school in Canada that will be featured in this documentary. One of the main problems that the study of history has been facing over the years has been a growing apathy towards the importance of the events of the past. Thank you very much, and Brad, back to you.
Thank you very much for that, Richard. I just want to give a very quick shout-out to Andrew Longhurst for pushing us over the $16,000 raised so far at CITR's Fund Drive. So, Andrew, you will live forever in News 101's hearts. We do thank you very much. And right now we're going to jump to Thunderbird Eye on Sports with Jeff Sargent.
Thank you very much. The UBC men's basketball team continued their perfect start, sweeping Thompson Rivers on the weekend. On Thursday night, the Thunderbirds had to come back from a 16-point deficit to beat the Wolfpack 84-81. Josh White led the Birds with 24 points. He repeated that performance the next night, scoring 20 to help UBC win in more convincing fashion, 84-68. UBC is now 5-0 in conference play and tied for first with Simon Fraser. The women's team got back on the winning track against Thompson Rivers. UBC swept TRU, winning 76-62 and 80-57. Zara Huntley scored 18 on Thursday night to lead the Birds. Then Leah St. Pierre took over as top scorer for UBC on Friday night, once again with 18. The 10th-ranked Thunderbirds are now 4-2, good enough for second place in their division. The UBC men's hockey team has finally snapped a losing streak that began back in late October. The Thunderbirds beat the Lethbridge Pronghorns 4-3 in a shootout Saturday night after blowing a third-period lead in a spirited affair Friday to lose the first meeting of the weekend set 5-4. After Matt Schneider's shorthanded tally tied things up early in the third period Saturday, Brandon Campos came up with an electrifying move in the third round of the shootout that held up as the winner. Defenseman Matt Pepe and Craig Lineker also tallied for the Thunderbirds in regulation. UBC is now 4-7-1 on the year, 1 point back of the Pronghorns. The Birds face the Calgary Dinos for their final four games before the winter break. Tamara Pickford got the shootout winner as the UBC women's hockey team defeated the Cebu Princess Rabbits 3-2 in exhibition play at the Father Bauer Arena yesterday afternoon. The Japanese women's pro team is on this side of the Pacific for a special Canadian tour. Neither team found the back of the net until UBC's Raina Cruikshank opened scoring in the second period. Kaylee Chinakos got the other Thunderbird marker. The Birds are back on home ice next weekend for a pair of games versus Regina. You can catch the Friday game on our website, citr.ca, with the Saturday rematch on CITR 101.9 FM. The perfect season for the UBC women's volleyball team continues with a weekend sweep of the Thompson Rivers Wolfpack at War Memorial Gym. The number one ranked Thunderbirds notched their fourth consecutive straight sets victory Saturday night, with UBC veteran Liz Cordonnier leading the way with 12 kills. The Ladybirds remain alone atop the Canada West standings at 8-0 and have only lost an amazing two sets all season. UBC remains at home this coming weekend where they host Simon Fraser Friday night, a match you can hear live right here on CITR 101.9 FM. Unfortunately for the men's team, their struggles continued with another pair of losses over the weekend. The Wolfpack swept UBC in straight sets both Friday and Saturday, dropping their record to 1-7 on the year. The Thunderbirds now enter their Christmas break, which starts on a bye weekend from Canada West competition. UBC returns to conference play in the new year in Regina, January 8th and 9th. The Cougars currently sit in last place in the conference, one match behind the Birds. That's your Thunderbird Eye on Sports for this Monday. I'm Jeff Sargent.
Thanks, Jeff, for that report. Now it's time for this week's weather report, and for that we turn to Alice Huang.
Thanks, Brad. Here's your forecast for November 23rd to November 27th. After a remarkable week of wind and rain that caused power outages and flooding over much of southwestern BC, most people are wondering if there will be an end to all this weather. Well, actually, it will actually improve this week. It won't be as windy, but we'll get rain. We'll still get rain. The systems coming in this week are not as unsettled, so we'll go back to a more familiar precipitation pattern. Monday evening to the overnight, rain tapering off to showers, a bit windy with a low of 7 degrees. Tuesday, cloudy showers, high of 10. Wednesday, rain, high of 10 as well. Thursday, periods of rain in the morning, tapering off to showers, high of 9. Friday, good news is headed our way. The day will be a mix of sun and cloud with a 40% chance of showers, high of 7. Currently, it's 7 degrees and lightly raining at YVR. That's your forecast for this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. For News 101, I'm Alice Huang.
And that's our program for November 23rd, 2009. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news at citr.ca. Megan Turcato produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Brad Pepping from the entire news team at CITR. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Career Fast Track on 101.9 FM CITR.